Hi, everyone. Welcome to the River Talk podcast. This is a podcast where we talk about rafting, kayaking, all kinds of fun stuff. Normally hosted with Priscilla Macy and Eric Weiseth. They're both off doing, they're busy people doing their stuff. And so I'm here with my friend Dougie Fresh, who is a co-host sometimes. Welcome, Dougie.
Thanks.
And our guest this week is Ali Vostries, who I'll introduce in a second. But before, we usually start with news of the week. Dougie, do you have any news this week? Anything going on?
No.
Yeah, I don't either. Well, the Wind Festival's this weekend. And so the Wind Festival's a big thing here in the Gorge. It's a Class 4 race. It's really fun. The levels are super low, but we're supposed to get rain on Friday, so it sounds like it's on. And so I'd encourage people to come out to for the Wind Festival on Saturday. And, you know, even if the wind's not running, you know, we'll find something to do. So it's a good gathering in the community. And, you know, I look forward to seeing people from all over the place. I know there's a big Idaho contingent coming out for the festival. So that's all I got in news of the week, other than the world potentially ending with coronavirus. But there's no point in diving into that one. So for today, I want to introduce our guest, Ali Vostries. Ali is an old friend of mine. We guided together for a number of years. She started boating on the Arkansas, I believe. It's Arkansas, right, Ali?
Yep, it's the Arkansas.
And we're going to talk about low water Middle Fork of the Salmon, or just low water boating in general. The Arkansas gets low a lot, so she has a lot of experience in the Arkansas, but also guiding on the Middle Fork, where she's an outfitter there. She's one of the owners of Middle Fork Adventures. So she's a perfect person to talk about low water Middle Fork. Welcome to the show, Ali.
Thanks for having me, Zach.
Yeah, of course. And, you know, a lot of people, I wanted to have you on because a lot of people are asking, they just got permits for the Middle Fork, and they're asking about, you know, how do I do the Middle Fork low water? I have an August 4th trip. How do I pull it off? Do you have any advice, just general advice or things people can do?
Yeah, I mean, from the start, I think once you know your launch date and start to figure out, you know, hey, what's the snowpack for this year? What are the historic flow trends? And, you know, there's great sites for that, like all throughout the USGS. You can nerd out on that as much as you want. And then you kind of have a couple big choices to make. Depending on the water levels, you can launch at Boundary Creek, which is typically what commercial outfitters do, until the water drops below somewhere around 2 feet. And some people held out a little longer, maybe to like 1.8. The second option is to fly your entire trip into Indian Creek. And so those are two pretty big choices right off the get-go.
And privates can deadhead. Do you know that, Ali?
I actually didn't know that privates could deadhead.
Do you want to explain what deadheading is and why people do it?
Yeah, sure. So deadheading is, you know, kind of like cutting the head off the top of the trip. And so the way commercial outfitters do it is that they'll send in their guiding crews with all their boats and gear a day before the trip actually launches. So it's a cool thing that the Forest Service lets us do down there is get all our gear down to Indian Creek. And then the guests typically fly into Indian Creek and their 6 day starts from there down. And so that allows us to get all our stuff in without putting it all on little planes and flying it in. How does it work for private boats?
They can do the same thing. I just don't think private boaters know that they can. But it's, you know, deadheading is an administrative permit that the Forest Service is nice to do for us. They don't have to. And so it's important we respect the deadhead permits. But I think they follow the same rules. It's one boater per boat. So, you know, if you're a private group, you know, your 4 or 5 boats would go down with one person rowing each one, and then all the rest of the people and more of the gear can be flown into Indian.
That's an awesome option. The other thing, depending on your group size, if you can just do a longer trip than 6 days, then there's really so much less stress about flying in gear or people at lower water.
So a lot of people, here's the thing, Ali, that people ask me about. They have like a, let's say, July 27th date, you know, and it's going to be about that. You know, I think the cutoff I generally use is 2.2, but we've done from the top, like is lower than 2 feet, but somewhere around 2.1, 2.2 is that cutoff. And you know, usually July 27th is when it's at that flow. And so people are like, well, should I deadhead, should I not? Like, if somebody has a permit late July, what should they be thinking right now?
In my experience, it would be how comfortable are you boating really low water? Because if that's not necessarily your, in your bag of tricks, or you just know you'd be really, really frustrated with that, that deadhead option might be for you, or flying in your whole trip to Indian. But if you have some decent low water experience, I mean, there's a lot of things you can do to limit the amount of gear you bring so your boats aren't super heavy, or bring more boats so that your gear is dispersed over a wider group. And then there's all sorts of tricks to get down that first 25 miles that are really that rocky, bony section.
Give them to us. What are your tricks, Al? Are you going to share them with us?
I'll do my best. So, there's a couple. The first one that I think we talk about a lot is once the water starts to drop out and get a little lower and all the rocks are coming out, is to start running your rafts a little softer. So for me, the test is, I definitely don't want it to be rock hard, like I was going to do high water, but I don't want it to be so soft that I'd be worried about, like, I don't know, like my foot or like a hand going between the boat and the frame. So I still want it to be full there, but a little bit soft. And what that allows is for you to kind of like slime and like slug around and off of rocks. But if your boat is like really stiff or rigid, I feel like you're more likely to bounce or more likely to just park on the rock. So that's tip number one, is just consider running your boat softer than you normally would. The second one is weight. Like maybe you don't need all the gear. Sometimes I joke that like rafting is exactly the same as car camping, but maybe worse because we bring like absolutely everything because we kind of can. So not like you're on a backpacking trip, but maybe go through your gear and pare down a little bit is probably smart if you're considering running off the top at lower flows.
Or you can fly that
And
stuff in
then,
too, like maybe leave some things
right.
behind, like the dense things, like some of the beer, that kind of thing, and then float
Totally.
down the things that aren't dense.
Yeah. And like, I know, Zach, that you and I both do this with our companies, is that we'll actually fly in the last few days' food so that we only have to bring that first day or two's worth of food because that takes up a ton of your weight.
Yeah, I mean, we don't fly food in that much because it's logistically challenging. I know you're better logistics than me, so you can figure that out. But I like to fly in beer and soda, things that are like the fire pan, just not have a fire the first night. So I'm focused on things that are dense. I try not to fly food in just because if it for some reason it doesn't get in, then you're in trouble. Or and I also don't like the cooler sitting in the sun, up in the air, up at the airstrip.
Yeah, those are all good considerations. It would definitely be a bummer if you had to start rationing on day
Yeah.
two.
Yeah. Like, oh, like there's a fire or something and they can't get planes in. So my in the back of my head when I fly stuff in, I try to have it be things like chairs, things that we don't absolutely need. I think propane. I can't remember. Can we fly propane? Well, that's something you kind of need, but things like that.
And I think that is a good, like, non-essentials, especially the heavy ones.
Yeah.
And then I think my last tip, which is probably the most important one, is that when you're boating low water, working really hard to stay off the rocks, trying to get that last stroke in, whatever it is, so don't get stuck. Don't get wedged. You keep moving over, the shallow shoal, whatever it is going to save you so much time and like a heartache of yarding your boat off of rocks. Like it's worth the fight to not get stuck.
Yeah. What like I think getting stuck is inevitable. Like it's just gonna happen. You're gonna get stuck if you run the middle fork
Totally.
below 2.2 feet even, and you can people run the middle fork low. Like you can run I've heard of it run down to 1.3. So it's doable. But you're gonna get stuck. What happens? What are some good tips for when you get stuck?
Yeah, so first it's just like Don't freak out because absolutely everybody gets stuck. And, you know, nine times out of 10, it's really not that big of a deal. It just might take you a minute to kind of solve the puzzle of how to get your boat off that rock. So, you know, the first thing that I'm going to do is probably see if I can just spin off the rock. So, you know, test out with either or and see if I can just do a couple of pulls and maybe that just shifts the boat around enough that it can spin off that rock. So that's kind of option number one. Option number two is to change the weight in the boat. And usually that starts with you and maybe your passengers. So if you can figure out kind of, I would say generally like the downstream lower tube and then getting on that and bouncing, and maybe you can just bounce your way off that rock. And those two seem to solve the issue most of the time. If neither of those do it, you can let some air out of whatever tube is stuck on that rock or the floor. I like to start pretty slow with that so that you're not just, you know, completely deflating a quarter of your boat. But, you know, let a little air out and then try both those things again. Grab either or, try to spin, try to bounce.
I love the letting air out of the tube things. And you were saying earlier about running your boat soft. When it's like, well, let's say below like 1.9, like pretty low, that's when I want to step on a tube and have it drop a foot. Like I want to slinky my way, like I like the word you use, slime. I want to just slime my way down the river. I want my floor to be half full so it just goes over everything. I'm more on the starting with it out of air, but also sometimes I'll start with it like you said, like soft but not super soft, and once I get stuck, then I'll let air out and just let it roll. You know, I won't pump it back up. I'll be like, you know what? It's at a level where I need it lower, and I'll just keep it. Maybe I'll start, like you said, like slightly deflated, but as it goes on, release air to get unstuck a few places and then just not put it back in.
Yeah, I usually do the same. I can't think of any time really I've pulled over in that top 25 to put more air in my tubes.
Yeah, like that's a good point.
Yeah, so, I mean, the soft boat really is, and especially, I think, the soft floor, so you can't just slither down that river. The other thing I think that's really helpful about the soft boat is if you do hit a rock, you're less likely to bounce, because I feel like that's where, especially when you get into some of the sections I think we'll talk about coming up, Zach, where it's just like a rock garden, if you start plinkoing around in there, like, that starts to not be nearly as fun.
Yeah. Yeah, and you're less likely to tear the boat because when the boat will wrap itself around the rock, if it hits it really hard, that's when it can tear it. But if you hit a rock and the boat kind of forms around the rock, it's not very likely going to tear.
Yeah, that's another great point.
I just thought of that. I feel really smart right now.
Brilliant.
Yeah. So, Allie, it sounds like when you're thinking about low water Middle Fork, you're thinking about the first 25 miles. What are those spots? What are the places that you just like in your head, you're like, man, these are tough spots.
Yeah, I think there's a handful that stand out. There's some low water kind of boulder gardens that can just be really frustrating.
Pinball.
But it's like pinball. And that's one of those where I think just momentum, you know, having a guidebook with you, try to understand, you know, generally what the line is in there, and then just try not to get too frustrated. The water is just not super deep in those spots. So even if you do get stuck, if you take your time, you'll get unstuck and you'll make it through. The ones I think of being like really frustrating and then, you know, and harder one, because I think they're just a little more dangerous because the water's faster, is Hell's Half Mile can be pretty tricky at low water.
Yeah, the first part or the second part?
I think that first entrance, when you come in and you're pretty far river right, and then you have to pull back to river left, there's just a couple rocks in there that seem to be pretty good sleepers and definitely get people from here and there.
And you know, the second part of Hell's Half, I think of it as, I'm sorry, oh, Hell's Half Mile. I was thinking of Powerhouse. Wait, let's go
Oh
back to
yeah.
Hell's. Oh, yeah, Hell's Half Mile. Yeah, that one's terrible. When you were saying that, I was thinking, really, Powerhouse? But you said Hell's Half Mile, and my brain was Powerhouse. But yeah, that entrance to Hell's Half Mile is brutal. And there's a couple routes. You kind of have to pick one, and they both suck for different reasons.
They do, and it's, I mean, and I think what I've seen stuck the most there for the longest, I've seen multiple sweep boats just perched in
Yep.
there, and it's a really tricky spot.
It's the entrance, but also you once you get past, I think you just mentioned this, but my brain was on the wrong rapid. You get through that tricky entrance, and then you have to make that really hard cut back to the left to run the second half of the
Yeah.
rapid. That cut is brutal.
That cuts really hard. Yeah.
Last year I was following somebody down through there, and they were stuck in that. There's like a place you could fit a boat, but it doesn't really fit. And they had a paddle boat stuck wedged in these rocks, and I bumped them and pushed them through. And I thought, oh, I can probably get to those rocks. It was a very quick, terrible decision. And then my 18-foot gear boat did not even come close to fitting through where the 14-foot paddle boat got stuck. And I spent 20 minutes there out of the boat, pulling, pushing and pulling on it.
Yeah, and it also is one of those spots where the river starts to channelize again. So then all of a sudden there's a lot of rocks, but it's also fairly deep. So it does, it starts to just be a little trickier. So that's one of those spots where I don't know if there's a great scout of that entry at low water, but I definitely try to set up very early for that right to left move.
Yeah, it would be hard to scout what I just feel like that entrance is terrible. Like you just go in
Yeah.
and you just deal with the entrance. And then, but while you're stuck, you're gonna get stuck. So while you're stuck, eye out that move to the left. Like I'm kind of, you know, and then when I get off the rock, like I don't just get off and then think about what I do. I get it where it's like almost off the rock, and I try to get ready to make that move. You know, so I don't just
Yeah.
like push, 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 and then deal with it. I like get it almost off and then take a deep breath and then finally get it off and be ready to make that aggressive move to the left.
Absolutely. Yeah. I think having a plan and, keeping that kind of heads up attitude of what's coming downstream. Are there boats ahead of me? Are there boats, upstream of me? So you can see those things coming, is huge and makes it a lot more fun.
Yeah, and usually when you're stuck in, when I was stuck in Hell's Half Mile last year, this one particular time, there were also boats stuck behind me in the entrance. So I was stuck in the middle, they were stuck behind me. And so I think us having a good communication, where they're watching me and they're not getting off until I'm off. Because if I'm stuck and then they get off and they run into me, that would have been a problem. So I think us communicating really well, so we're not bumping into each other, is a big one.
Yeah, that's huge. And I think that just goes with some of the general, courtesies and things we can do on the river that whichever boat is kind of downstream has the right of way and not barreling into people while you're all stuck and bouncing around the river.
Yeah, the boat spacing is tough at low water. Getting it so you're not take because if you run too loose, you're gonna take all day, right?
Yeah.
If somebody's stuck halfway down, you maybe do want to enter, knowing you're gonna get stuck in the entrance. You don't want to wait for them to finish the whole rapid. If everybody does that for everybody, you'll never finish,
No,
right?
you'll be there forever.
You'll be there forever. If you like everybody is at the top and they go one boat at a time. But you also don't want to be getting a situation where boats are bumping into each other. So there's a very fine line, you know, that you have to follow between when boat spacing that you kind of figure out as you go. And I think that's where just a piece of advice I just thought of to add to our beginning. It's just like boat with people that you like and trust. You know, if you're gonna do a low water trip, if you're gonna choose to do it lower than you should, a factor is your team. And is it people that you like and get along with, you know their skills, or is it people you just met and you guys are going to figure it out? Because that might not work out so well.
Yeah, I agree with that. And I mean, it can be trying, especially if you're not used to boating a lot of low water or used to getting stuck. It can feel a little embarrassing.
Yeah.
But it's not that big of a deal. And I think there are ways to, deal with any of the situations you're gonna get into that, take your time, take those deep breaths, make sure you're safe, make sure you're communicating with your team. And then you're still gonna have a great day on the water, even if it's not huge, big, splashy waves. It's just a different kind
Yeah.
of boating.
Well, it's embarrassing for me, Allie, because I feel like I hold myself to a high standard. As the owner, I'm supposed to be really good at boating. And so when I get stuck and somebody who works for me floats by, it's hard on my ego, because I hold myself to be perfect. And I have to be like, no, I have to like talk myself off like a little ego cliff. Be like, it's fine. Like, I'm allowed to make mistakes. But I get self-conscious, when I'm not perfect.
I do too. It's hard. Since, both you and I are moving around a lot in the summer, and so we're not on the Middle Fork every week either. I mean, a lot changes week to week with water levels, different things can happen. I've actually started to be lead boat a little less because of that.
So, what are some more spots? I mean, Hell's Half Mile is a big one. What are some more spots that you think of when you think of low water?
So I think of that one. The entrance to Sulphur Slide, which is actually above that, where you really have to hug that left bank, and then move to the right of that downstream boulder, I think is visually kind of exciting. That's an easy scout though.
That's a great place to scout. You know what's terrifying about that one is that log partway down.
Yeah, there's a couple things in there that are.
That log has never been a problem and it's been there forever, but I just feel like you see it and it just adds to the stress. And it could be, I mean, if somebody swam, it definitely could be dangerous, but like you're boating down and you basically have to almost ram into a log on your way down.
Yeah, visually it's pretty intimidating. But that is a great one to scout. And you can see once you're up above it there where the water is going. It does really help plan that.
I scouted it
But
last year and still got stuck in it
did you?
though.
Oh no.
Well, Helfrich passed me while I was stuck.
Oh,
That was
that's my least
embarrassing.
favorite. They're so quick in those drift boats.
Well, not just Helfrich, the rest of our crew passed me too. Like, oh, have fun. Good luck catching up. I just made me think of it's also so there's Sulphur Slide, but there's that move between the upper Sulphur Slide and the lower Sulphur Slide that's brutal too.
Oh yeah,
That's
that whole
almost
section is
harder.
tricky. Yeah, it's not as visually intimidating, but that's a hard move.
You don't even like you forget that it's coming up, and all of a sudden you don't see even where to go or how to do it. And I'm pretty confident, like a below two, I get stuck there every time.
Yeah, that's a pretty hard spot. It is, and it's one of those low water conditions where it's like, I have no idea where all the water went. It looks like it's all 2 inches over shallow water.
But it's swift enough. Like one of my methods for getting us stuck, usually is I get out a lot and push. But that's a tough place to get out and push because the water's moving so fast. And once you come off, you're moving fast. There's not always time to jump back in.
Yeah, and you definitely want to be with your boat. I mean, that's priority number one.
That's a good rule. Stay with your boat.
Yeah, high water, low water. Yeah, that's a tricky one.
What about the entrance to Velvet? Not Velvet itself, but that little entrance above it. Do you ever struggle there?
I have gotten turned around in there before, but I worry a little more about that spot when the water's a little higher. I think when it's slow, I think sometimes we're so focused on, Velvet the feature that it's easy to kind of forget about the entrance. And I have in there got spun around before and then had to get back in the right position. To go over the drop at Velvet. I think that's one of those places where, especially if you've got good communication with the people you're boating with, I think it's a pretty appropriate place to pull off those rocks And you can still get plenty of momentum to go over the drop at low water.
Yeah. Well, there's some more spots. What are some more of the big places where people get have troubles a lot?
Yeah, so especially in the top 25, as you get a little lower, the chutes can be challenging. But out of all the rock gardens, I don't think they're the hardest part.
You know, like, so you know the part above the chutes, those shallows above the chutes?
Yeah.
Those are brutal. I call those avalanche atolls.
Oh, that's a cute
ATOLLS.
name.
And only because there's this guy. Remember that guidebook that guy Peter did, that like laminated guidebook? He calls it avalanche atolls in his guidebook. And so I've stuck with that name out of respect for him.
Nice.
That's just my own thing.
Yeah.
But that's one of the most,
Yeah,
I think
it is
it's
super shallow
brutal.
up
It's super, it doesn't look hard. It's just really spread out, and you could spend half an hour stuck there pretty easily.
there. Yeah, I think you could.
Especially if you went right, because you know we go down left generally, but if for some reason you went right, you would just be grounded out for a while.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, you'd be hiking your boat back upstream.
But to me, the chutes, so like there's avalanche atolls, what I call avalanche atolls. To me, the chutes is sort of the crux. You don't think so, Allie? You think it's pretty, like, that to me is the hardest one.
The chutes?
Yeah.
I mean, I think the main chute with the kind of like central boulder, that is just such a steep rapid, even at low flows, that I've definitely seen a lot of people, including myself, get spun around in there and then pushed really far right at the bottom and get stuck. I've seen a couple of swimmers in there, which is
Ooh, yeah.
really not fun. And so yeah, that one's a real deal. The ones above it, with the other chutes, I think are tricky in that they are just that kind of low water boulder field, but the main chute rapid is, I think, at low water is probably when it's the hardest.
Yeah, I think that's the hard, for me, that's the one I see the most problems. Is the chutes, but you know, but it could be. I mean, I think that one I call avalanche atolls. That you know, like, people call it the upper chutes, but there's no chutes there. It's just shallows, or it's called something shallows. I think people get just tired in there. Like they've just a lot of times they'll go in there and get frustrated and tired, and I think that mindset heading into the chutes causes problems. Like this, the mental game of like getting caught on shallow rocks for 20 minutes and being a little bit tired, and then going into the chutes could be part of the problem.
Absolutely. If I was on a private trip, I would take a lot of breaks.
I mean, when you're getting stuck, that's kind of a break.
Yeah, take a deep breath, check out the scenery, look for birds.
Yeah. Fish.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, fish are fun to see. Oh, or you mean actually fish?
Actually, fish. I don't fish that much, but like low water Middle Fork is an amazing time to fish.
It is. As long as you don't have anybody upstream waiting for you, it'll
Yeah, that's
be,
true.
yeah, get that rod out.
So,
Yeah.
yeah, what are some more of the rapids?
The other low water ones that stand out are, I think it's worth talking about Powerhouse, but also the Artilleries.
Yeah. I don't know. I still don't even know what to do with the Artilleries.
Now, I think I don't know what to do in the Artilleries either.
There's too many of them, and there's too many routes that I just don't ever remember what the routes are.
Yeah, and there's definitely a couple that are misleading at the top, and then you can get
Yep.
super bouldered out.
I think that's my problem, is they all, I just kind of overlook them, and I forget the order of the Artilleries. So I just forget which one is which, and I'm like, I'll just make it up as I go, and I inevitably get stuck somewhere.
Yeah, those are those ones are worth, like, before you come into them, doing a little flip through the guidebook and
Oh, that's a
seeing
good
if there's
idea.
any info on left to right, right to left, kind of beta in there.
When you say the guidebook, which guidebook are you talking about?
So I use two. The one that I keep by me the most is the Middle Fork guide by
Matt Leidecker.
yeah, I keep the Leidecker one with me a lot. I like the size of it. And I have his pretty well memorized, so it's very easy for me to flip through. And then I think it's Tom Martin has the large scale one, which I usually also bring with me, but I don't usually keep that one out.
And
What I like,
do they have route? I don't look at them that often. Do they have the routes for low water? Are they mapped out in those books?
In the Leidecker one, they are. So he has for several different rapids, high and low flow information, which is pretty helpful. The only thing that I warn people about sometimes is sometimes I think it can be like a little bit like TMI and it can like freak you out a little bit. Like I think still using your own skills to read water and scouting, are probably your best friends, but there's still some really good information, especially on like some of those boulder gardens where it's hard to read. If you've got a passenger with you or you have a second to glance down and look through those, it can definitely save you getting stuck.
I think my only warning with using those is that it is the Middle Fork and the river does change. So just don't, they're, it's not set in stone. It's the guidebooks are pretty good, but things do change over time. And there could be wood or think, you know, it could be a new piece of wood somewhere too. So I think your advice of using your own judgment is really good.
Yeah, I agree with you on that. I mean, that's one of the coolest things about the Middle Fork is that it does change a lot.
I love it. I mean, every time there's a blowout, it stresses me out, but it's also like, oh, cool, there's a new rapid and we get to see something new and tell stories about, you know, the first time we ran the rapid. Like, I like that
Absolutely.
there's new rapids and things are moving. It's definitely a natural place in flux.
It's one of the many special things about it. So use your own eyeballs and your own judgment, but
What about
for some of the slow water things.
pistol?
Low water pistol.
Is it worth scouting?
Well, one, it's a really fun scout. I think it's worth scouting. I think that Lake Creek can be above pistol can be fairly challenging. But the eddy to get to the scout is not super hard to catch, especially when the water's down, and it's a decent size eddy, especially for the Middle Fork.
So you're saying scout below Lake Creek, like that one, like that long flat spot where you pull it on the right after Lake Creek. Not Lake Creek, the creek itself, but after Lake Creek Rapid, there's that nice place to pull out of low water.
It can be a challenging catch, when it's higher, but when the water's low, you get through the main portions of Lake Creek, and then there's a pretty big eddy on the right with kind of a beach, and there's actually some like old mining equipment up there and stuff. And you can pull off there, and there's a trail that goes up to an outcrop, and you can kind of look like right over Pistol. So you can see the whole entrance. You can't see the very bottom, but you get a great view of the rapid.
It's kind of fun to have somebody stay and take photos too. It's a great place for photos. You know how I like taking my photos.
Like to see how sick I look.
Well, it's not how I look. I take photos of everybody else. I like to see how sick everybody else looks.
Oh, I see.
Hopefully someday I'll take a photo of me.
One of these
One of these
days.
days.
Yeah, I mean, one, Pistol is a super well-known rapid. It's, one of the ones that people talk about. So going to look at it is cool. And I think it's worth scouting because I think it's a pretty unique rapid too, with the way the bedrock comes out and the different eddy lines and currents in there. I think it's worth a scout.
So I talked to somebody, a private boater the other day that is doing a private trip, and he asked me specifically about that. I think it's called the shark fin rock. So when you run pistol, you know, there's typically like a main left channel and a main right channel. At low water, the right channel doesn't go. So you have to go to the left channel. and then it divides between a rock. It's become famous for tearing boats, floors. I
Yeah.
think it's called the Shark Fin Rock, or I may have some other name.
I think.
Do you have any advice on which way to go? Is one or better than the other? I didn't have any advice. I mean, they're just different moves. Do you have any advice?
Yeah. One, if you can scrape your way right, it's a lot easier.
Can you? I mean, is it even possible?
I heard people went right all year last year.
And so do you just go right and then get out of your boat and pull it down?
I think people were floating. I don't think people were getting out
Wow.
because I went left all
That doesn't
of.
make any sense to me. There's no way a boat can float that channel.
I don't know. I heard rumors
Huh,
that people
okay.
went right all year last year. So that's the less spicy move if there's water in there. Otherwise, you're just, yeah, dragging your boat over rocks.
Yeah, my advice too is if you're going to think about going right out of the water, definitely scout,
Definitely scout.
because you it may not go. It may go, but I don't know. That sounds crazy.
Yeah, I and that's another reason to scout is to decide which of the entrances you're going to go with.
Yeah.
I actually, if I'm going to go left, I am more inclined to like smash into that hole that's right next to the island, so to the right of the Fin Rock. And the reason is I have not successfully made it to the left of the Fin Rock without dragging some portion of my boat over it.
So like
The
in so
way,
do
yeah.
you when you take the right move, I'm the same way. I've always gone right. Last year was the first time I went left and it actually went okay.
It didn't. Yeah.
And Audrey gave me this advice and she said it won't look like it's possible when you're going into it,
Yeah.
but you'll make it. And I was like, all right. But I typically grind on the rocks on the right. And if I'm on an oar board, I'm kind of pulling to dump momentum. I'm just slowly grinding down the rocks on the right. And that's how I go down the right chute. Does that sound like how you do it?
Yeah, if you're going to go down the far right on the right side of the island.
Yeah. So you have to kind of pull and just kind of dump momentum, keep to the inside. If you go left, this is what she told me and it worked. You just kind of stay along the left side and you keep floating and it just kind of goes. And it was fine.
Yeah, I
It
think the
doesn't look like it's
inclination
possible.
why going like far left and left of the Fin Rock gets people and why I think it's gotten me. Is that you feel like you should stay off the shore? Like you're worried, like, oh, if I bump the left bank, then I'm definitely going to get sent into that Fin Rock.
Yeah.
But I actually think there's enough flow moving left to right. It's actually kind of hard to hit the shore, or that left riverbank. So I think, yeah, if you just stay over there, I've seen people make it look really smooth, but I usually, yeah, go through the giant hole.
So past Pistol, you're pretty home free for the low water rapids, right? Is there anything past Pistol that you worry about in the lower, I want to talk about sieves in the pat last 10 miles a little bit to finish up, but like
Yeah.
low water sieves, but in terms of like low water technical rapids, like is there anything you think about in the lower 80 miles?
You know, honestly, I feel like it gets so much easier at that point.
Yeah.
Also, because after that 25 miles, you're an expert low water boater.
Yeah. You basically have learned a ton your first 1 to 4 days on the upper section that you're this it'll
So
seem way
hungry.
easier.
Yeah. No, there's not a ton I worry about in there. You know, there's a couple other sections where it gets kind of shallow.
Yeah.
But you know, just the increase in flow from all the tributaries down there, it just doesn't even feel like the same river once you
Yeah.
get past Pistol.
Because you get Pistol Creek and you get Indian Creek, and then they just start coming in more and more. The one that comes to mind is that section just above Stateland. There's a shallows, a
Oh
move you
yeah,
have to
there's there.
make where it's just, you don't even see where to go. It just, you kind of have to get lucky.
Yeah, that's a super wide part of the river,
Yeah.
so it does shallow out there significantly.
So there's a number of sieves on the river at low water. The one I think about a lot is at Earthquake Rock. And it's not really in play, but if you went too far left in the entrance, there's a pretty nasty sieve in the entrance
Yeah.
of Earthquake Rock. But there's some, that's one, but there's some dangerous spots in the last 10 or so miles What are some of those spots?
Yeah, so the one that we focus on a lot, especially if we have people in like any kind of small craft, is at House of Rocks.
Oh, yeah.
So in that one, especially as the water drops out, big boats have to make a move where they enter in this left channel and then move right of this large boulder. But there's a sieve on the right. And there's a channel that goes on the left, but not for like probably even a 14-foot boat, depending on the water level. So we usually, it doesn't matter the flow, we always send our small craft,
When you say small
enter.
craft, you mean duckies and hard shells.
Duckies and hard shells. Yeah, we just kind of don't play around with that one at all.
Yeah, I totally agree. But rafts, like if you're a private boat rafting, and it gets, I'd say like somewhere around like 2 feet, two, I don't know, somewhere around 2 feet, you probably can't get a raft left, and you have to go
No.
down the main channel. So there is a sieve, a pocket on the right in that main channel at House of Rocks. And it's the kind of thing though, if you're in a raft, you would just kind of get stuck in there. Like
Yeah.
if you're in a ducky, you could swim and swim to it, it'd be terrifying. If you're a rafter, the issue you're probably gonna come up with is you're just gonna get really stuck in there and be there for a couple hours pulling yourself out.
Yeah. Yeah, and I think that there's enough water moving there that getting back out around that rock could be a little, it could feel a little dicey. So yeah, so that spot, I also think that it's another one like where I like to come into that one and actually pull to the right once I enter, because I just like to slow my momentum and just keep it like nice and easy. And I just feel like it slows down the rapid and it makes that move just super smooth. So I always set up to pull on that one.
Do you start right or start left?
I start left.
Okay. I got super stuck there last year,
Oh,
and
did you?
yeah, I did two sweep runs through it. The first one I started left and thinking I could just like go down the left side, but I ended up having a little bit of left to middle momentum, and it kind of perched me up on that rock and by the sieve a little bit. And so my second run, I actually started right, and just which was a little terrifying, but knowing that I was going to build a little bit of right to left momentum, and then it was fine. But
Yeah,
I had a
I
pretty
can see
bad
that.
perch in there where I was like this isn't good, but it turned out okay.
Yeah. Yeah, what are the other sieve spots that you think of?
Is it called jump off? Isn't that jump off rocks? There's a
Yeah.
sieve on, there's like a sieve undercut on the left. And so it's at that point, the thing about jump off, at that point, you feel like you're the queen of the world or the king of the world or whatever. You're just like, I'm such a good boater. And then, you're just bombing stuff. And there is a really nasty sieve undercut thing on the left. And so you have to like recalibrate and say, okay, slow it down. Just stay right at the beginning. Start right and just stay right to avoid it. And I've seen some boats go over on the left, had to do some pretty gnarly things. Were you on that trip with me where that Boy Scout group came through and had some problems there?
Yeah, and I think the there's a wave that comes off the jump off rock that I think is super tempting to hit, which is part of why people end up too far left.
Yeah, and also I'm just overconfident at that point. That's my thing is I have
Yeah.
to recalibrate my brain and not get overconfident and just say, nope, stay right. Keep it
Yeah.
easy. And I don't know if the guidebook mentions it or not. Like it's a good place for everybody to know about and it's really easy. Just stay right. Take the boring right run, and stay safe. That's the other big one I think about quite a bit.
Yeah, and it is one of those, yeah, like let's keep it fun for the end of the trip.
Well, I'm sure we missed a couple things here and there, but that's a pretty like I feel like we covered some of the key spots. As we were talking, I was just thinking of a few pieces of advice to pass on. One of them is have good shoes because you're almost definitely going to get out and push. Dougie?
The thing that resonated with me was what Allie said, that her third clue, which is just be pretty aggressive and active in trying not to get stuck. Like, put those last few strokes in, just be super aggressive, because that will save you, could save you 20 minutes and avoid getting stuck.
Yeah, I've heard the term spin to win. You know, like, go push, 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 and then once the front of your boat hits a rock, like, allow angular momentum to spin the boat off of that rock and just keep trying to, like, once you're stuck with something, try to just do a bunch of spins to keep making forward progress down the river.
Yeah, that makes sense too. Yep.
So I think that kind of sums it up. Do you have anything else to add, Allie?
No, I think, you know, I'm sure we forgot something, but yeah. I think that we, like, covered the, you know, the best parts of the Middle Fork at low water.
and those of you that are, like, Middle Fork experts that are listening to this and they're like, you guys are totally wrong, like, let us, send us an email, or, like, on our website, you can go to the bottom and leave a comment on, like, do this, do that. I apologize if we missed some particularly dangerous spot. This isn't a complete, like, start to finish expose of the Middle Fork at low water, but it's just our best attempt to have a fun conversation about it. So thank you guys so much for listening. Unless you have anything to add, Allie, I think it'd be fun to go to gear of the week, which is how we kind of end the shows. Do you have any gear you're excited about right now?
Gear I'm excited about?
Yeah, like, we just something to throw out to our audience, be like, man, this, I've used this really cool thing recently, and I suggest other people check it out.
Oh man, Zach, I have to buy all new river gear this year.
Oh yeah, I remember that.
Yeah, I was just living on my old stuff last year after my river bag tragedy. So really, I am. And
it's an, I would say it's an opportunity to update your fashion to 2020.
It's true. I'm not going to be looking so 2016 anymore.
Yeah.
You know, one of my favorite things that I use on the river is just my river bag. I've replaced the same river bag a handful of times, just gone through them. And I really love this shop that's based out of Salida, Colorado, called Tough River Stuff. And they make a bunch of different bags, but River Rat Ray makes, I think, just the best, like, personal guide bag.
Wait, his name is River Rat Ray?
That's what he goes by. Yeah, okay, man.
Cool. I didn't know. Wait, when you say river bag, you mean like a mesh bag your stuff just goes into?
Yeah, one of those, like, you know, whatever that, like, recycled plastic stuff is. Yeah. Like, I just like his stuff. It always has good attachment points to strap it in. The sizes seem to be, like, really well planned out. So you can get your helmet, your PFD, your shoes, just all your personal gear. Keep it really contained, organized, and keep your river ready.
So, Allie, I've always been jealous of your river bag, the one, the River Rat. I've seen it before. But I, as an Oregon, California person, I can't get my – I feel like – it's sort of like when I wear Melanzana. I feel like I'm trying to live the Colorado lifestyle, and I'm not. And so I kind of want to get one, but I feel like I'll be a poser since I'm not a Colorado person.
I mean, Zach, I won't tell if you won't tell.
Yeah, well, people will know. They'll be like, yeah, Zach, you're not really a Colorado person. Kind like when I wear a Melanzana and I see a true Colorado person wearing one, I kind of duck in the bushes. I don't want them to, like, judge me for being a fake Coloradan.
Oh man, it's rough. So what do you do with your gear? Do you just, like, buckle your, like, helmet to your life jacket to your shoes?
Well, I try not to. Sometimes I do that. I have those little bags. I used to make bags, you know, those ones that I've had made before, but they're not as durable as that, as the River Rat Ray ones. I like the name River Rat Ray more than Tough River Stuff. They're not as durable and not as big. Like, those ones are beefy, and the attachment points on those are sweet. They have that, like, those little web, like, tubular webbing things on the ends, if I remember right. They're just really easy to tie in. Like, those are – I just use, you know, crappy regular ones that everybody has. Or if I don't have one, I just, clip my stuff together.
Yeah, and I mean, I've also, you know, done that too. I like – I think for me, especially when I'm guiding, like the better organized my stuff is so that I'm super efficient at camp, just makes life a lot easier. So.
So, like, I get that bag to carry my stuff in the truck to put in a takeout, that kind of thing. On the river, are you using that in your boat somehow? And then at night, do you put your gear in there as well? Like, I guess what I'm asking is, do you use it during the trip as well?
I do, yeah. I usually store because I'll fill up like two water bottles in the morning, and then I'll put whichever one I'm not drinking out of currently in there. I put like my coffee cup in there. I put flip flops in there so I can change out of my river shoes. And I usually actually have my map in there. And I just rig it somewhere where it's super easy for me to get in and out of that top zipper.
Dougie, do you have any gear of the week?
Just going along with the lightweight theme, I would say there's so many good lightweight sleeping pads out there nowadays. So invest in a new one if you still have one from 10 years ago.
Dougie, I feel like everything you have is from 20 years ago.
Well, I recently upgraded my sleeping pad, so I got a Neo Air. It's still actually 4 years old, but they're great. It lasts great, and it's so much smaller than the old ThermaRest.
I have that same Neo Air I've used. I keep putting holes in it.
I've only brushed through, I think because of the valve was rubbing on it, I brushed through one little spot, but I put a piece of Tyvek tape on it, and it's been great. Just one hole.
I'm a big fan of those for lightweight backpacking slash ducky trips, but for boating, I just feel like I would tear through those things pretty fast. My gear of the week, which I just am spacing on right now. What was my gear of the week? Oh, so Palm Equipment. I just learned about this new PFD they have called the Nevis, and I don't think they're technically legal in the U.S. because they don't follow like whatever our Coast Guard standards are. But they've kind of revolutionized safety vests, I think. And so it's called the Palm Equipment Nevis. I don't think they're for sale in the U.S. So, but if you're somewhere else, they're worth checking out. And there's a cool video about them. I'll link to on our website. It's just they've took a few years and tried to reinvent PFDs and safety harnesses, and I'm pretty stoked on it. Although I haven't seen one in person. I just, some people told me to read about it, so I did. That's mine.
Nice. You should send that link out.
I will. I'm gonna. I'll. I'll on our website. I'll post the. I'll send you a link after this to the whole podcast. But we have a web page for every episode, and I'll put a link. Actually, I'll embed the video on the website for people to check it out.
Sweet.
So, well, that's another episode of River Talk Podcast. If you have questions for us or anything, you can email us at questions@rivertalkpodcast.com. We like questions and comments. It's always fun to give your mail. We also have a website. You can leave comments at the bottom of each individual podcast page. And yeah, Dougie, thanks for being a co-host. Allie, thank you for taking time out of your busy schedule to chat with us about low water, Middle Fork, and just boating in general. It's good to catch up with you a little bit.
Good to catch up with you guys.
And yeah, we'll see you guys, everybody, in the next episode.
I'm on Chattanooga.